Welcome back to the Electrify Podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, North America's largest EV festival coming to a major city near you. All right, here we are talking about Electrify Expo. Check the website for all the stops coming through your city. New stops this year for 2024. Exciting to see not just cars, it's mobility, it's exercise. It's, you know, you're like, oh, EV, I'm not working out. Well, it's a compliment, right? It's the technology. It's talking about, you know, progression. What, how do we utilize the tools? What are maybe some solutions that can be solved with EV technology? And also those that are fighting the good fight for, you know, we only got one planet. Let's take care of it. There's some options there. Again, it's not the absolute answer to it, but Electrify Expo, check out the website. I'm Jared Deanda, once again out here. We have a special guest joining us here, but also a special co-host here, Tony Donaldson. We're going to talk about e-bikes. He's got a cool graphic. If you're not watching it, he's got a bike that we can break down the model, and this is the technology forging ahead. But the gentleman joining us here is all about e-bike legislation, the growth of e-bike, the benefits of e-bikes. And like I said, some people kind of scrutinize it about, am I working out? Yeah, you're working out. It's just a little bit of an aid. You know, I mean, my knees thank me. But joining us here is Mr. Peasy, and that is Mr. Larry Peasy joining us here. Now, Larry, did I introduce you properly? Is that kind of a good generalization of what your kind of mission is?
Well, it's been my mission for, you know, more than 20 years. I manage a bicycle company called Alta Cycling Group, and some of our brands are Diamondback and Redline and iZip. And I've been in the bicycle industry my entire career, more than 45 years, starting in retail. And in the late 1980s, I met a guy by the name of Malcolm Curry. He was a guy that had formed an early stage e-bike company and was looking for a brand partner to develop. And this was, you know, really, really early stage from a global standpoint. Dr. Curry was a former chair of Hughes, and he went to General Motors when Hughes was sold to General Motors, and he got exposed to electric vehicles through the EV1 project that General Motors was working on back in the day. And in his retirement, he had a vision for lightweight electric mobility that could benefit, you know, underdeveloped countries and provide motorized transportation at a very low cost. And he formed a company called Curry Technologies. And I met him while I was working at another bike company. And he brought a kludge of an electric bike into the showroom where we met. And he said, why don't you go take it for a ride? And I sort of, you know, grimaced a little bit and then smiled.
You're killing the pedals, man. Like, here's this old school. I mean, you were on a penny farthing, Larry. I'm joking. I'm joking. Old guy jokes. I got gray hair, gray beard. Again, if you can't see
me. Careful there. I am an old guy, I admit, but yeah.
And that's why e-bikes are good. That's kind of why I started out. But sorry, I want you to repeat that again. When you met Dr. Curry, what year was that? And also, what's a Curry? I just kind of got to dub it down there.
I grimaced when he showed me this bike that he brought in, and then asked me to take it out for a ride, which I did, and I came back with a big grin on my face. So because I really, you know, I understood his vision, but my comment to him was, Dr. Curry, I don't know why you'd want to screw up a bike by putting a motor and battery on it. And there was silence in the room for a period of time. And he said, well, perhaps when you get closer to my age, you'll have a better understanding. And sure enough, long story short, I went to work for him, and we grew the business through a very exciting era. It was still really early stage. And then I acquired that company with some private equity investors, and we sold it to a Dutch conglomerate called Excel Group, who, you know, had already taken e-bikes mainstream in the Netherlands, and we were off and running. The problem we had when we, you know, in the United States is e-bike regulations. So Dr. Curry was really integral in getting e-bikes to be considered consumer products rather than, you know, a motorized vehicle that was regulated by NHTSA. And that happened in early 2002. And I joined the company in May of 2002. So they had already defined a low-speed electric bicycle, and that was handed off to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And the problem with that is that definition was really preliminary. The technology wasn't developed to the extent it is today, and it didn't impact regulations for use. It only impacted regulations for, you know, bringing a product, importing a product into the country and first sale. So we had a definition that was really great, and it was no longer considered a motor vehicle, so it didn't need, you know, all the, you know, components that like a motorcycle or a moped would need. And, you know, we're off to a really good start. Regulations for use typically happen at the state level. Sometimes they happen at, you know, municipal level as well. So here I was in a really opportune situation, one of the early, you know, brands in the e-bike space with wonderful backing from, a great Dutch company that had a lot of money to invest and a vision for growing e-bikes in the United States, taking the mainstream like they had in Europe. And we found ourselves, you know, we were located in Southern California. We had a company based in Simi Valley. And in our own backyard, e-bikes were regulated like pretty much like a moped, like a motor vehicle. Yeah. And our quest as an industry was to get them regulated like a bicycle. So that it could use bicycle infrastructure, and you know, because there's so many similarities to a normal bicycle, very, very different than any motorized vehicle that, you know, that we had to contend with. So I got a bunch of people from the industry together, got them to contribute some money to working at the state level in California to get some legislation introduced so that they would be regulated like bikes. And we very quickly found a sponsor for the bill. And in the final hours, we did a total faceplant. The bill got knocked out.
And what year was this?
And this was in 2014.
Okay. So fair. I mean, 10 years. That's Yeah. It's not too long ago, you know, that's crazy. Yeah.
So the next steps I took were to get the entire bicycle industry aligned behind getting regulations passed. And I joined the Bicycle Product Suppliers Association. Very quickly, I was appointed as a board member of that association. And they said, "You're the e-bike guy. We're going to, you know, put you in charge of raising money from the industry and going after not only statewide legislation, but countrywide legislation." And I worked with some really smart people that had a background in, you know, public policy. And we devised a plan to appropriately divide a very broad definition of a low-speed electric bike and divide it up into categories so that they could be properly regulated. A little bit of background, in contrast to Europe, where e-bikes or pedelecs, they're called, are regulated, they have a low, relatively low wattage motor. They're pedal assist only, and the top speed is about 15 miles an hour before the motor cuts off. And they're regulated just like a bicycle. As a matter of fact, they're defined under the definition of a bicycle in most European countries. But in the United States, because of the work Dr. Curry did in 2002 to get this legislation passed, e-bikes could have up to a 749 watt motor.
We're America. We want hot rod. We want big meals. Yeah. We want to supersize this thing, right? We want the faster, the better.
Certainly the mindset, but made it super challenging, you know, when it came to regulations. And of course we could go up to 20 miles an hour under motor power only, which meant we could have a throttle. It only had to have operable pedals. Wow. So, you know, we were confronted, and part of the reason we did a faceplant is that we didn't get everyone, we didn't get advocacy, bicycling advocacy organizations aligned. We didn't get community organizations aligned. So we developed this three-class structure. So class one, pedal assist bikes, where the motor cuts off when the bike reaches 20 miles an hour. Class two, sort of the same thing, motor cuts off at 20 miles an hour, but can have a throttle. And class three, which is pedal assist only, where the motor doesn't cut off at 20 miles an hour. But we decided that it was probably unsafe to build a vehicle with bicycle components that could exceed 28 miles an hour. And there's some background, because speed pedal X in Europe, which are considered motorized vehicles, but they are built with normal bicycle components, have a 45 kilometer an hour top speed. So 28 miles, 45 kilometers, the same thing. So we designed model legislation based around this class system. And the first two states that we went after were California and New York, the two largest states in the country, right?
Sure.
Got
the bookend countries that, you know, dictate a lot of culture and just obviously, you know, growth, population, all those things. Larry, I'm going to interject here real quick. You're doing a great job. We're 12 minutes in this thing and Tony's just sitting there. I feel like he's biting his tongue because I kind of want to chime
in. No, not at all.
You know, it's intriguing to me. And that's what I love about this podcast, because you talk about the different levels, this level of education of what an EV bike is. But, you know, Tony's got the graphic. We brought him in, Tony Donaldson, as a special guest host. What's the first thing that comes to your mind, Tony, when Larry, EV Peasy, I don't know if anybody's ever called you that.
Never.
But I have to. Never? Dude, you're EV Peasy. I'm just like, oh my gosh. But Tony, what's the first question that comes to your mind when he's elaborating about this journey that is, you know, this EV bike?
Well, the fascinating thing is they crafted this model legislation, and it actually, if you look at the way states operate, like with state charters and that kind of thing, one state does it and everybody else goes, oh, that works, let's do that. And so that's sort of how it's spread. And how many states is it now?
Well, the good news, it's adopted. The three-class legislation is written into the vehicle code in 45 states. Four more already regulate e-bikes like bicycles.
And
all but two states, Alaska and a little state known as Rhode Island on the East Coast, have not adopted the three-class legislation. So, you know, we're almost done, 48 out of 50 states. And, you know, quite frankly, we're focused on other things. E-bikes have become, you know, they're close to being mainstream in the United States. I would say we're still in a developing market. Tons of upside opportunity and a lot of good things that come along with that upside opportunity that could solve a lot of problems that we've yet to tackle. But, you know, there are other issues as e-bikes have proliferated that have gotten our focus now. So it's been a long-term pursuit working with People for Bikes, which is our industry association. We merged the Bicycle Products Suppliers Association with People for Bikes. I chair the Electric Bicycle Subcommittee and I'm a board member. And, you know, it's been a really enjoyable pursuit, but it, you know, we have issues that we need to overcome. And, you know, the need for continued work on the legal and legislative front is going to be ongoing.
Tony, what's give your accreditation here and your background, because you come to it from a passionate side and an advocacy. So they brought you in, but elaborate on kind of your role in this whole in this space.
Well, I was the editor of Electric Bike Action magazine for 7 years. That's how I met Larry, reviewing a lot of bikes that Excel Group had and that kind of thing. My dealings in the space go back to, I worked with Lee Iacocca on e-bike in the late 90s. I was the photographer that did all of his marketing and advertising photography and that kind of thing. And then I worked with Zero Motorcycles when they first launched. And then I wound up working for EBA and ultimately taking over as editor. So I've seen ridiculous change in the industry. Yeah. The early e-bikes, and Larry, you were into this before I was. Like Lee had a vision of this being the future of transportation, and he was right, but he was 15 or so years ahead of the technology. So we didn't have the technology until the, you know, mid 20 teens, to really make these things right. And the change that I've seen in the past 5 or 6 years has been just phenomenal. So the technology is there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, when Larry, when you were elaborating about this story and the EV being introduced to bikes, and is it bicycles? Is it pedal assist? That confusion still exists right now. Here we are in 2024. But a story that comes to my mind, which sounds very similar, and this is what we talk about in the automotive space, is, okay, well, when we went to fuel, you had horses transport the fuel to get to the cars, right? And here we are now where it's like, the generators charge the things that charge the car, so which are fuel powered. I'm thinking of the Harley Davidson story. You know, here's the Harley Davidsons that put this bicycle and motorized something. That's what we're on this cusp, right? I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, and that's my role as being the host of this podcast, is kind of bringing it in, and I'm calling myself it right now. Keep it simple, stupid. Make it. You know, and I love this for somebody who is a huge advocate, who's riding a Sauron, who's riding, you know, the bike behind Tony. And there's so many different manufacturers, good, better, best. And, you know, making that website that's easily digestible, or if it's golf clubs, which golf club do I use? Which, you know, there's many. So would you say that the story of EV bikes is very comparable to Harley Davidson and their struggles and education and, oh my gosh, what is this magic machine? You're a wizard, you know, you're a demon, you know, you're a witch. What do you think?
I think there are some parallels that you can draw. Absolutely. I think that the challenge that we have with e-bikes, low speed electric bicycles, is that it's a very specific category that has a lot of liberty to use different kinds of infrastructure. And the problem that we have is there's a lot of fledgling companies that have entered the space that continue to push the envelope and sometimes straddle the line. And when these products hit the market, you mentioned Sauron, for example, Saurons have created incredible havoc in the mountain bike space, because early on you could buy a pedal kit for your Sauron, and it, you know, they said, oh, it's a low speed electric bicycle, I can go where, you know, on mountain bike trails. No, you can't. And, you know, so we've had to, all the work that we've done to try to get access, especially on natural surface trails, all around the country, through all kinds of land management agencies, the federal agencies, the state agencies, and even local municipal parks and so on, can get spoiled because a company pushes a product out into the marketplace, straddling the line of what is considered an e-bike versus an electric motorcycle, which it is. I don't have any problems with products like Sauron, but it's got to be regulated within its class, right?
Well, I've seen the videos. Karens are really mad at him. Like, I'm joking, the whole Karen thing. But I've seen these videos of these bike riders. Get off. And I know we've all seen them, right, Tony? Like, Larry, I mean, and that was a question I was going to bring up is, so back to the American concept and Saran here, they're, like you said, they're flirting with what's legal and what's not. So you're saying they're even more hot rod than these 28 mile per hour pedal assist. This is just this kind of total different product.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great point. There's a lot of products. I don't want to just, you know, call out Saran. You mentioned it. So I thought I'd lean in.
No, please.
But there are a lot of bikes in the market that are considered or are marketed as class 3 low speed electric bicycles that don't really meet the definition of a class 3 low speed electric bicycle. So to be a class 3, a legal class 3, you first have to meet the definition, the federal definition of a low speed electric bicycle. So a motor that under motor power only can exceed 20 miles an hour with a 170 pound rider on a paved surface, right? And Tony knows this very well from all of his experience reviewing e-bikes, that a lot of products that are on the market today that are labeled class 3, you can put it in class 3 mode and just pick up the bike standing still, spin the pedals because it has a cadence sensor as opposed to a torque sensor. And that rear wheel can get going, you know, 28 miles an hour. That doesn't qualify. That is, we call this category of products out of class electric vehicles, OCEVs. And we have a statement on the People for Bikes website that, you know, is our statement about these products. These are really products that are destructive to getting e-bikes to get normalized and to further proliferate. And we're really at an opportune time right now. You know, the other issue that we're confronted with, aside from out of class electric vehicles, are battery, lithium ion battery fires. I mean, you know, a lot of media, you know, especially in New York, where a lot of very low end, low quality bikes are being used by gig workers that are primarily, you know, delivering food around the city. Great application, right? And much rather have them riding around on an e-bike than, you know, a motorcycle or a moped or, you know, something that's spewing CO2. Yeah. But because they can't afford to really buy a quality e-bike, or their sponsors, you know, Grubhub, et cetera, Uber Eats, are not requiring that these products be quality products with safe batteries. And, you know, the battery is the most expensive, in some instances, the most expensive component on even a cheap e-bike. And when, you know, these guys are riding 100 miles a day on average, which is pretty remarkable. They're not doing that on one battery pack. They probably have three battery packs or more stored in different places around the city charging. And when they deplete, when they wear out, because they're only good for, you know, 800 or 1,000 recharge cycles if you have a good one, they're actually taking them apart, or they're having someone take them apart and replacing the cells, which is a disaster waiting to happen. So e-bike battery fires, and they, you know, there's a lot of micro mobility products that, you know, they call e-bikes that aren't really e-bikes, but whatever, micro mobility battery fires that we're seeing are caused because of attempts to rebuild a battery pack, or they come in on really low quality products that are imported into the United States under the de minimis provision. And, you know, they're sold on marketplace sites like Alibaba, eBay, sometimes Amazon. You could, you know, just go take a look at lithium ion battery replacement lithium ion battery packs, and you'll see thousands of them at really low prices, and they're, you know, a disaster. Yeah. I know for a fact, based on information that was shared with me by FDNY, that the landmark share of these battery fires that are occurring are because of these kinds of products. There is not a single quality product that is being produced to a standard. And there are standards. Europe, because e-bikes have proliferated much earlier than in the United States, has an EN standard that most companies that sell e-bikes globally, you know, have tested their products to.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, e-bikes in Europe have a lower top speed and they're only pedal assist, they just, you know, it's really a firmware modification that gets them to go to 20 miles an hour, you know, the US standard. So they can be tested to the European standard. They're perfectly safe and used in the United States.
Yeah. Like Jackrabbit, you know, the little foldable bike, theirs is, FIA? So you can fly with it. So that's another, you know, right? When you check your luggage, do you have any lithium ion batteries? There's a reason for that. Tony, what are you most excited about as far as trends and innovation? Maybe I'd love to kind of sit in the room voyeuristically. You guys are staying on the same Apple box. What are you guys excited about? Innovation of future trends. I don't want to just kind of, you know, obviously people listen to this, they're either intrigued. You know, I always ask, like, who do you want to listen to this? Either already advocates that can help, you know, educate people. Sounds like Larry EVPZ is getting down and he only needs two more states to collect them all like Pokemon. But what are you guys most excited about when it comes to innovation, future trends, and the future? You know, it's like my son, he's going to go to college, you know, Flagstaff, like something like that. I don't know.
Right. Well, so... The trend that I'm seeing right now that I'm really excited about is all of the bike companies that are coming in, and Larry, you'll appreciate this, with torque sensors. So the low end bikes, because, you know, that's generally been the, like, mid drives have a built in torque sensor, and most lower end commuter type bikes and that kind of thing have a cadence sensor. And the difference is when you start pedaling, it takes almost a full revolution of the pedals to engage the motor. But once you do that, it will take you to whatever the top speed of that mode is. So like mode one will take you to 12 miles an hour. Mode two will take you to 15 and so on. And it's very unnatural. It can be very abrupt. A torque sensor relies on your pedal pressure, your own input to engage the power system, and it can be immediate, but very natural. It's like you have superhuman legs. So, you know, if you put it in mode one, you're going to get a little assist, like eco mode. But if you put it all the way up in turbo, it gives you the full power all the way up to 20 miles an hour, or 28 miles an hour, whichever class it is. Digressing slightly, and going to your earlier point, I think, we're Americans and everybody likes upgrading their bike, right? I mean, it's same with upgrading the car. You go to SEMA, you know this stuff. Everybody wants to have the craziest thing, you know, a Hellcat with like extra stuff on it, because America, right? So Larry, what's your best advice on how to handle the fact that people do this? Because, you know, you can have a Hellcat, which has immense power.
Where it's ample. You really don't need to throw more exhaust and horsepower, nitrous, all that stuff. But gosh darn it, you sure want to do it, right?
Well, yeah. And that's the thing, right? That's the inclination of all of us is we want to, you know, hop up our vehicles. And so, Larry, you know, how's the best way to address this?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's really pretty simple. You can hop up your e-bike, but it's no longer an e-bike from a regulatory perspective. It has to be regulated as the kind of vehicle that it's capable of being. So rock on. Just make sure you're riding it in the street. And if it becomes a vehicle that requires registration because it's more powerful or faster, you know, it's got to be registered, which means you have to have a VIN number and all those things that, you know, registration requires. So
yeah,
I love it. You know, I mean, I grew up on anything two wheels, you know, I love going fast. I have no problem with it, but if it's no longer, you know, a low speed electric bicycle, just use it in the appropriate, you know, place and you know, obey the, you know, the regulations as it applies to the class of vehicle you're utilizing, and do what you want with it. That's, yeah, that's well and good. I agree that people like, you know, power and speed. But in many instances, it's just not appropriate. I mean, if you're riding on, you know, the beach path in Santa Monica, Tony, with kids and people walking their dogs and skateboards, yeah, and rollerblading, it's probably not a good idea to be, you know, exceeding, you know, the top speed of a, you know, class one or class two bicycle. Maybe even that's too fast, right?
Well, and the funny thing about that is that it's still technically not legal to ride on the beach bike path on anything electric. 50% of the people out there are. The people that I see going the fastest, though, are the roadies.
Yeah.
The guys on just regular acoustic road bikes.
Analog bikes, road bikes. Well, there's no bad dogs, there's bad owners, right? So, you know, you can't drive a Porsche Cup car on the street, you know, if it's Cajun slap. You could sure try, and I know friends that have, but you're gonna get rolled. So, and you're seeing these, you know, Saran, or again, just using that as a unit of measure. There's obviously competitors in that market that, as you say, what was the acronym again? The
out of class electric vehicles, OCEVs. Yeah,
and like you said, you're not knocking it. You're just saying use the right tool for the job. So take those bikes to your homeboy's backyard, and they've built the rad jumps. I've seen them. I know it. Like, again, you know, hanging out with the Nitro Cross and Nitro Circus cats, they have them. Chelsea Denofa, FD champion, he has one. He's like, bro, these things are nuts, and they're so fast and immediate. And like you said, that torque thing, they're sweet. But what I love what you're doing, Larry, is you're educating people. You're taking the necessary steps. And then that segues into the next question is, what can EV advocates do to help you and Tony? And, you know, just because, again, there are such a range of bicycles and bikes. I mean, even my son, you know, he grew up on a Stasic, you know, and just seeing that brand evolve back to Harley Davidson. Wow. Here's Serial One, right? Like, look at what they're doing with that. Like, we could talk forever, but Larry, what can an EV bike advocate do to help the message?
Yeah, I think I think it's, you know, it's education is the primary thing. You know, there are bills being introduced because of the problems with people, you know, straddling the line or crossing the line that ultimately are going to probably result in some sort of enforcement where people can get seriously fined or have their, you know, their bikes, you know, taken away by law enforcement. We don't want it to get to that. So we produced a series of videos called E-Bike Smart, and you can find ebikesmart.org on a platform that People for Bikes has put out. So we did this specifically because of some issues that have been presenting, especially in beach communities. In Southern California was the tip of the sphere, but you know, it's happening elsewhere also, where younger people are beginning to ride e-bikes without any kind of, you know, parental guidance or oversight or, you know, experience, and you know, and then getting hit by a car or killed. And a lot of it is because you know, other vehicle users aren't familiar with what an e-bike is as well, and things happen unexpectedly, and you know, all of it. I mean, they're used to bikes on, you know, using bike infrastructure or riding in a bike lane, but when you know, a bike is going 20 or 28 miles an hour and they're making that right turn crossing the bike lane, they don't expect that bike that they passed, you know, 2 minutes
startles you
to be right on them. And, you know, and people are getting seriously injured and sometimes killed. So, you know, education is primary, and that's why we produce this series. It would be great if you could include this link.
Absolutely. E-bike smart. Say it again, the website.
It's ebikesmart.org.
There's some great information in there.
But, really, tell me what? Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that is step one. Step two is getting government to appropriately cover the space, create a regulatory landscape so that a bad product or unsafe product or untested product with, you know, sketchy batteries never make it into the stream of commerce in the United States. So that's, you know, sounds simple, but then you got to close this de minimis loophole, which, you know, we have the most liberal, I don't know if people know what de minimis is, but, you know, when you import a product into the United States under $800, it comes in without any documentation at all. And, you know, uninspected, and millions of packages a day come in. So, you know, what can be done is Congress can close this de minimis loophole on products that are, you know, that have hazardous materials like lithium ion battery. And, you know, they could exclude, you know, this hazmat exception in de minimis. And that would really make a big difference. And, you know, we'd be back on track talking about all the wonderful things that e-bikes do rather than talking about battery fires and people getting, you know, injured and such riding an e-bike.
But it all comes down to education as we're doing right now. And again, hopefully anybody listening to this is an advocate and they're making those necessary steps, sharing the website, be like, hey, you know, going down, not the beach, but going down, you know, again, in Santa Monica, going down the road. Hey, what is that thing? When I rode a Super 73 down the street, everybody's stopping me like, hey, what is that thing? Okay, well, it's this. And here's the solution. I'm not going far, but right. And there's so many solution solvers when it comes to the e-bike. And you got to think also backtracking to e-bike sales went up tremendously during COVID, right? During the shutdown.
Oh man.
So there's lacking education there. And then if they're doing something stupid, they weren't getting pulled over. They weren't getting any repercussions. So again, oh my gosh, that's a ton of worms. But we're starting somewhere and we just go fishing and catch the right fish, right? I mean, Tony, anything else you kind of want to add or questions? Or Larry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but are there any other steps or Tony, anything that you can think of as far as, I mean, you play a major role in this space as well.
Not too much that I can think of. I mean, Larry's my favorite go-to person for anything e-bike and, you know, it, from the legislation side and the technology side, it's just fascinating to watch it grow. What were we selling? We were hoping to get to 400,000 e-bikes sold a year in the, you know, 2016 ish. And now we're what, over a million?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Unfortunately, a lot of those bikes, Tony, are the low end bikes that are sold direct to consumer that aren't, you know, don't have certified and tested batteries and aren't built to a standard. So, you know, I think that's coming because the Consumer Product Safety Commission, as a result of the battery fires in New York, announced that they're going to implement a battery standard. And we're at People for Bikes, we're working very closely with the CPSC to develop that standard with, you know, all of our engineers and such. And then the second phase will be to develop an e-bike standard so that we can only see quality products in the marketplace. That's really big. But, you know, hey, I wanna touch on your question about what's coming, what's in the pipe and innovation. The thing that I am really excited about is IoT and smart bike technology that's coming at us. And we're starting to see products introduced into the pipeline that fall into this smart bike category, which is really cool. And the things that it can do to enhance the experience of riding a bike, like automatic shifting, you know, a lot of consumers, especially recreational consumers, they have a hard time figuring out derailleur systems, and you know, they find themselves in the wrong gear, and you know, it's just confusing, and then it's messy if they're not shifting correctly. But we're beginning to see, you know, brands like Shimano, for example, Shimano is a major e-bike drive system manufacturer, but they also make all the other components for a bicycle component system, integrate electronics into all those things that work with the drive system. And companies like Bosch and Yamaha and Brosa doing these really incredible things with IoT. And this stuff tends to trickle down market really quickly. So, you know, things come to scale. These components become like torque sensors that Tony was mentioning, totally change the game from a user experience perspective, are now affordable so that, you know, even some of the lower priced direct to consumer brands can deploy torque sensors and make that ride experience, that ride feel really intuitive and natural. And that benefits the user from a safety perspective as well. Because when you get on that bike that has a cadence sensor and you get that jerky start and people, you know, I mean, my Lord, I've had people, you know, that I've been demoing a bike to way back in the day, you know, take a header, you know, in the first 10 feet because, you know, they were just surprised by the way the motor actuated. Fortunately, those days are gone, but you know, it's, yeah. The best is yet to come. That's my message with regard to e-bike tech.
EV peasy, man. And yeah, I mean, even in clip-ins, you know, like I used to ride my road bike. I haven't ridden in a while, but that technology just, I would say, it's probably like a 4-year gap, you know, from Shimano 105 to this, to SRAM that, and that, you know, centrifugal hub, all those certain things are so exciting and just applying that. But the education is really zenith, you know, and you know, we skimmed over the fact I rode a Diamondback as a kid and you entered with the whole Redline Diamondback. I started sucking my thumb just thinking about that, setting up ramps with cinder blocks and a piece of plywood. Sorry. Yeah. I felt like a kid talking to Larry here. And, you know, I know Bob Harrow and stuff like that. And there's these major players in the BMX world. That was, I mean, back in the day, right? I mean, Joe Kidd on a Stingray, you know, talk about that evolution, right? And what that looks like and BMX and mountain bikes. I mean, with the drop posts, just these little advancements add to that riding experience. And that's what it's all about. That's in 4 wheels, 2 wheels, 1 wheel, right? Adding to that experience, educating people. So you don't look like Mike Tyson on a hoverboard and slam down like a, you know, big building. We've all seen that video too. I try to make it fun. And that's why I hope people are laughing with us and enjoying this and maybe gained a little bit of knowledge, right, Tony?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. And Larry, I mean, thank you so much. Again, bikesmart.org?
Bikesmart.org. You got it.
Boom. That's it. Anything else you want to add, Larry? Websites, things? I mean, you know, all that. Mother's maiden name, blood type, you know, whatever. Go ahead. Have at it.
I think you got it. I just say to the listeners out there, do the right thing. You know, if you have a hopped up e-bike, ride it in the street. Don't ride it on bike infrastructure, and you know, don't try to pull the wool over folks' eyes with regard to what you've done with your bike. Have a great time on it, but do the right thing. That's not all that much to ask.
Yeah
And I encourage all the bike shops that are selling e-bikes to come up with programs to teach new bike owners the best practices for e-bikes and for bicycles in general.
Yeah,
and you know, realize that when you're on the road, you're invisible. No car sees you.
Yeah, and that's what happened. I mean, you guys worked with this major OE back in the day. You're talking about Iacocca and stuff, and that silent car, you can't hear the car. You get taken out, and like I said, here's, you know, teenagers riding bikes in beach towns, and they're moving along and chatting to their friends and aren't paying attention. It's faster than their normal bike. We talk about the bad side to only grow from it, right? You don't sensationalize the crash until you make sure they're okay. But this is a real thing. So that's why the advocacy is so important. And it's good that somebody like Larry is on the manufacturer side and working with the shops, working with the bikes, but also working with the government. And, you know, obviously you're like anti-punk rock and roll, but at some point you need a lashing, man. You need a spanking. I say that metaphorically, but you know, you need to have that right education and just go on the straight and narrow. So take those, you know, those again, Sirans and the other bikes to the parks and go shred and put up cool videos. Kook slams. Go ahead. We'll watch it. Yep. You know, if you're going to crash, at least let me film it, you know? Well, EVPZ, I joke all lovingly. And again, Larry Peasy, thank you so much. Tony Donaldson, thank you so much. And some great education here. Bikesmart.org. It is an organization on, again, all that e-bike advocacy. Thank you, guys, fellas.
Thanks for having us. Take care, Jared.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Jared.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo. Be sure to catch full video episodes on YouTube at Electrify TV and follow along on social media for daily clips and more.